Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. Today is podcast number 91 for Monday, January 30th, 2012, with Ben Stone and Kai. Today will be another in our series on raising a nonviolent family. Now, this is pre-recorded, and so I'm just going to go right to the recording. So this is going to be episode 3 on our series in raising a nonviolent family, or non-aggressive.
Non-aggressive.
We decided on calling it non-aggressive. After much discussion.
We're renaming it, yet again.
With us, actually on the table, you're about to hear, is Nikki climbing around on the table with the microphone. She's going to try to knock it over. Here, come here, little girl. There we go. All right. So I think our attempt, and I think we wandered quite a bit, but I think our attempt in the first episode was to talk about babies and toddlers and the rights of babies and whether or not they were just, oh, Nikki's got a squeaky toy. Oh, boy. So we're going to have squeakies in the podcast. Folks, I wish there was a way to lock us in a different room or lock her in a different room, but these would be unacceptable and there would be scratching at the door and crying and howling and wailing and gnashing of teeth.
But to apologize for the occasional
squeak.
Squeaky
toy. Nikki's a good little girl and we don't want to leave her alone and by herself. So, sorry. Anyway, in episode 2, I think we were attempting to talk about the toddler years through the early school years, and we talked about, we tried to talk about some schooling aspects.
We never really sat down and made a plan for this, so
no,
there was a lot of wandering and
it's just a bunch of crazy anarchy.
There was no central planning for any of this.
That's right. We're gonna go in that direction. No central planning. Mises would be proud. So in this episode, I think we're gonna at least attempt to talk about the preteen and teen years, mm-hmm. and that can be, you know, when that little baby will not let you sleep more than 45 minutes or 2 hours if you're lucky, mm-hmm. and your life just surrounds this, just feeding and wiping up this child.
And a completely helpless being that, you know, you can't even, it's not like you can even set it down and go take a shower.
Right. It's just a constant need. It's really trying, and that's really difficult, and that's really hard. And then right when you think that the world can't get any more difficult, all of a sudden you can sleep at night. I don't know if we can do this with the squeaking. All of a sudden, you can sleep at night.
Let me see if I can switch her out for her sock.
Okay, that would be a good idea.
Did her sock make it down here?
I think it's still upstairs. Okay. So hopefully we have the squeaking taken care of. We've swapped Nikki's toys, and you may still hear a flopping sound as she destroys her sock toy. But at least it won't be squeaking at us.
We were talking about preteen to teenage years.
Yeah. And the challenges, because right when you think that the world is starting to get normal again and you're starting to sleep good at night and you've got that little baby and it's starting to do really well and it's gooing and gawing at you and everything, and all of a sudden it hits its toddler years
and
the challenges. Yeah. And now the challenges really open up. And just about the time you think you've got the toddler thing taken care of, the little monster grows a brain and you got a 5-year-old you're trying to deal with.
And I think one of the hardest things about trying to raise an independent, intelligent human being is when they are independent and intelligent.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's really easy to have a kid who's so browbeaten that you say, go clean your room, and they go clean their room,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it's kind of trying to have a kid who
wants to negotiate the cleaning of his room and for something else. And
yeah, you know, who has these skills and intelligence and, you know, understands logic to the point where they can say, well, you know, first I would have to do this, and mm-hmm. then, and you're like, oh, just go do it, you know?
Because I said.
Yeah, and you know, as a non-aggressive, maintaining those principles mm-hmm. is really hard, because the second that you become hypocritical to those views, then the child knows that that's, you know,
right.
The child, I have, and this is more directed towards the child raising years, but it's teenage as well. Your kids will not mimic what you tell them to do.
Right.
Your kids will mimic what you do.
Yeah.
You know? So if you come home every night from work and you put the TV on and you spend 3 hours watching TV.
Yeah.
There's no way you can get your kids not to watch TV all the time.
Or it just, or the same way if the computer games mm-hmm. or whatever are the problem, then you're not going to be able to peel them away
from
it.
You know, if you want your kids to eat vegetables and mm-hmm. you're not eating vegetables, mm-hmm. you can't get your kids to do it. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and it really doesn't matter. Oh, I'll make you sit there and sit in front of that. That doesn't work.
This is the same with children and acceptable and non-acceptable adult language, too. Mm-hmm. Now, I've known a lot of parents who use the quote-unquote adult language among themselves and then expect their children not to.
Yeah.
Well, even if you have your children in a situation where they don't do that in front of you, guess what? They're doing it behind your back anyway.
Yeah.
So, once your children get away from your presence, you don't have any control about whether or not they're going to use the quote-unquote good language mm-hmm. or bad language. So all you can really do is set an example. And if you set an example...
And explain the reasoning behind the example.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not just, thou must never say this word.
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe have some explanation as to why it's acceptable to use certain languages in certain situations mm-hmm. and not acceptable in other situations. And then walk that life. Mm-hmm. And if you can't or won't or don't think that's important, then why are you forcing it on your children?
Right.
You know.
Well, you had that comment made to you when you were working. Mm-hmm. You had, you know, if you grow your hair, how can you expect your...
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I forget the exact... What was the
yeah,
terminology?
A very religious individual. He comes up to me and he says something to the effect of... how can I expect my son to grow up and you know, be clean cut mm-hmm. and proper and good? And what he's equating having short hair with being a Christian, by mm-hmm. the way. But how can I expect my son to grow up and have and get haircuts and be good when I set the example of having long hair?
Because, you know, there's never been any Christians with long hair and a beard.
I know. What kind of crazy Christian would have long hair and a beard?
It's,
I mean,
like
that's just
wearing
loony.
Sandals or something.
It's not
acceptable.
Like if you were like some kind of person who wanted peace and didn't want to butcher your neighbors, you know, just because they were different ideology.
Anti-Christian. Wait.
But, you know, he had a principle down mm-hmm. in the sense he had it in the sense that that you set an example for your children first, you lead by example. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, his twisted mentality that somehow salvation or a good Christian is based on whether or not you fit a particular look that's acceptable within his congregation. Stinking, filthy Puritan scum.
Mm-hmm.
But...
I find it so funny when people say, oh, Puritans have... You know, there aren't Puritans anymore.
Oh yeah, they just shape-shifted.
They don't wear the hats with the buckles anymore. But
yeah,
they're not there.
They're not burning people right now. They're instead trying to pass laws to inflict their will upon people, and yeah. You know, the same as they did back then. The reason they were able to literally burn people, and everybody, pretty much everybody knows that it was the Puritans who were burning witches, so-called
right.
witches at the
right.
stake, which most people who know that story know that it was all a hoax anyway.
Right.
However, what most people don't realize is the Puritans weren't only burning quote-unquote witches.
Yeah.
The Puritans were killing anybody who wouldn't conform to their ways. Cromwell literally had an army that went through purging England, killing yeah. people. But anyway, that's not our topic today, I suppose.
Must stay on topic this time.
Stay on topic.
So the point being that you have to even when it's trying, even when it's hard, even when you just want to go, do it because I said to do it, you know, take heart in the fact that if your kid is trying to negotiate with you, and if your kid is trying to bargain, and those are good skills.
Yeah.
You know? Yes, it's annoying. Yes, it
even
is
debate.
Hard. But that is good.
Even debate, as long as what we're talking, as long as the communication we're talking about here remains respectful, as long as it's an exchange of information and your work, it's a working discussion. When it becomes, you know, no, 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 I hate you, that's a whole different issue altogether. But as long as there's actual negotiation, discussion, debate, then I think it's really good to allow. You know, here we are. In this situation, you know, as many times as I may have failed and said, just knock it off and do it. but generally, I tried not to be that way. Generally, I tried to encourage you guys that if you did have a different opinion, let's talk it out. Let's figure it out and see. And I'm an excellent debate opponent, so you're going to lose. But it'll be fun to watch you struggle. not quite. That's an exaggerated example. But I am rather good at debating. So.
And it's, you know, it's entirely possible that your kid is going to be better at debating than you are.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And just because your kid is capable of debate doesn't mean that you have to let them walk all over you.
Right, right.
You know, you can say... That's a very valid argument. You've brought up a lot of good points. However, you still need to do this.
Yeah, because ultimately, where does the food come from? How does the house get heated? How do we have a house? And they need to understand that the value of these commodities that they are utilizing and that ultimately, you know...
You know, they need to respect your property rights.
Exactly, yeah. You
know? And, you know, pointing out... When you know you don't do your chores, you're in violation of an agreement. You know that when you come about it from a very logical standpoint, most people are rational enough to understand that that is, you know, understandable. But when you just scream and yell and make arbitrary judgments that are not obviously based on rational ideas, that breeds, you know, well, I'm going to, fine, I have to do this, otherwise I'm going to be punished, but I'm going to do it the worst possible way I can do it, just enough to skim by, you know.
And this would be a good time to point out that anger can really be an enemy. Anger, whether the child is angry or whether the parent is angry, anger can really be an enemy of the household. So, you know, whenever possible, if you start to see anger as the driving force of any series of discussions or issues or decisions or anything, it's imperative to stop the process, stall it until the anger can recede, and deal with it logically. Because decisions made in anger are rarely logical decisions.
Yeah, and, you know, I find it interesting because... healthy couples will oftentimes get into an argument or you'll get mad at each other. And one of the best ways to overcome that is to say, okay, you have to walk away.
Yeah.
You know, you have to go your separate ways. You have to cool down and then you can come back and discuss it rationally.
Yeah.
Because when you're angry, you say things that... You know, they say you say things you don't mean, but that's not true.
You actually mean that in a very harmful way.
At that moment, you mean that. You really do, but it's not something you mean to say.
Yeah.
And that's a huge difference because...
True honesty where we say everything we think...
That's horrible.
It's very dangerous. Now, that doesn't mean I approve of lies. That's not what I'm saying. But you need to protect the feelings of others by not necessarily expressing every thought that pops into your head.
Right.
But when you're angry, you do that.
Yeah.
You do express, you look for every angle.
You respect your spouse enough to not argue in anger and to walk away and to cool down and to, you know, recover your emotional stability.
Yeah.
And you need to respect your children enough to do that too.
Yeah.
And it's really important that when your child gets angry, you also remain calm and remain, you know, okay, I know you're angry. We need to take a calm. You know, that's, I think, where timeouts are a great thing. Not a timeout for punishment.
Exactly.
Because a timeout for punishment doesn't work.
No.
But a timeout to say, okay, we need to step away from this.
Yeah.
We will revisit this in a half an hour, you know.
Yeah.
And when everybody's tempers are cooled down a little bit, you know.
Yeah. In a sense, if you're familiar very much with dog behavior, and again, you know, some people get really bent out of shape when you compare kids to pets. And so just chill out for a second, folks. But if you think about dog behavior, if you have a dog, and this is to a certain extent, this is different in different breeds. My oldest, he's my only son. My oldest child, my son, who's not a child, by the way, he's a man, and he has two dogs. He has Meat and Brock. Meat is a little, probably some kind of odd Chihuahua mix or something. It's a little Dachshund Chihuahua, something weird mix in those things.
Right.
And and Brock is, some type of boxer.
Yeah, he's a boxer.
Is he actually a pit bull? I don't think he's a pit bull, but he's some type of serious boxer breed,
right?
Whose head is about the size of a basketball, and his mouth takes up almost the entire size of his head, which leaves no room for a brain. And Brock is a wonderful dog; he has a great attitude and everything like that. But there's this switch in Brock's head that says "play,"
right?
And when Brock's brain is flipped into the play mode, everything is play, and play sometimes means pick it up and shake it violently. You know, Brock plays with the intensity of a Viking.
Right.
And then when...
in mid-season.
Yeah. And everything Brock does is to that extent. So, for example, if a squirrel runs across the yard and Brock decides that he wants to... Brock decides nothing. His brain, deep on the lizard level, kicks in, and he goes into attack mode. And there, if there's, this is an exaggeration, but if there's a block wall between him and the squirrel, woe be it to the block wall, because his head's going through it. I mean, when the switch is flipped, he goes into attack mode, and there is no thinking involved.
And that's been bred into him.
Yeah, exactly. That's part of his breed. And people will say that, and I'm a person that says there's no bad dogs. There's only bad dog owners.
Right.
And Brock is a wonderful dog, and Brock is also wonderfully dangerous. In the wrong situation, he could seriously hurt somebody because he has that ability to flick into the attack mode in a heartbeat, and he doesn't have the ability to click out of it very easy. Now, you switch that over to little dog, Meat, and little Meat has the exact same ability to go into attack mode. The difference is his little mouth will barely fit over my fingers, and he can snap back out of it just by saying his name.
Right.
It doesn't take a whole lot to get him out of that.
He wasn't bred for that specific purpose.
Exactly.
You know, boxers and pit bulls and those types of breeds were not bred for really hunting purposes.
Right.
And with a hunting dog, they need to be able to go into that hunting mode and then come out of it when their master tells them to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you lose your game.
Right. But defensive dogs are totally different.
Yeah.
And that's what those dogs were bred to defend their master or defend their pack or to fight on behalf of of this cause or whatever. So now every human being has some natural blend of those characteristics as well. And whether we're talking about a 50-year-old man or whether we're talking about a 12-year-old child.
And I find it interesting because there are... You know, you can talk to people and you can say, do dogs have temperaments for their breeds? Well, of course they do. Do cats have temperaments for their breeds? Well, of course they do.
Mm-hmm.
Do humans have temperaments for their breeds?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a racist thing to say.
Yeah, and we're not talking about race. We're not talking about people of African-American descent or people of Irish descent or people... Exactly.
You know, and it really does not have anything to do... You know, there are Irish people who drink and there are Irish people who don't drink.
Right.
It's not based on a geographic...
Mm-hmm.
location. It's based on specific genetics within family lines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and specific families are bred for hard-headed stubbornness.
We know this as a fact.
I wouldn't know how, but, you know, and some families are not.
Right.
You know, and right. So you have to understand that if your family has a history mm-hmm. of severe stubbornness,
yeah.
that trying to get your kid to do something via stubbornness
yeah.
is not going to work out well.
Exactly.
You know, like, I remember as a kid, mm-hmm. the you'll sit there till you eat that. Okay, I'm going to have to go to school in the morning. Or not. Hey, I don't care. I'll sit here instead of go to school. That's awesome.
Uh-huh.
Free day off from school. Woohoo! You know, it's that knowledge of I can hold out more than you can.
Yeah. And this is something, just like with what I was talking about with the dogs, this is something you have to adjust as a parent. You mm-hmm. have to adjust the way you behave and the way that you provide expectations for that child and mm-hmm. how you respond to them. And I've heard this said over and over about how you have to treat all the children exactly the same and equally. Well, all human beings are not equal.
No.
And now, I'm not saying you should use favoritism. I'm not saying you should reward one so that you can use that as a bribe to the others
right.
or any of those things like that. But what I'm saying is you cannot treat two human beings exactly alike mm-hmm. and expect to get the same result. Because people are different.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you recognize, I think most parents realize, if you have multiple children, I think most parents realize the vast difference
mm-hmm.
in each one of these.
Which is why, you know, I hate to keep beating the dead horse, but...
You have a dead horse?
Well, yeah, I'm not allowed to eat it.
Well, why am I buying all this dog food?
But this is why... Standardized schooling does not work.
Exactly.
Because,
yeah.
you know, for me, I do not learn math the way that public schools teach math.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I mm-hmm. can't. I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. There's no part of it that fits in my brain.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
But I have seen math demonstrated in a way
mm-hmm.
that I go, well, how come nobody did it like that? That mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yep.
And... As a person who's in charge of one to, you know, a couple of kids,
mm-hmm.
you can get to know each child. You can understand this child learns best this way, this child learns best this way, and you can customize it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can work with how they can best understand the material.
Mm-hmm.
But to just hand out standardized,
yeah.
you know, read the textbook, take the quiz.
Memorize.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Some children will learn that way,
mm-hmm.
but some children will not learn that way. And it's not that those children are stupid. It's
right.
not.
Exactly.
It's that those children need to learn a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no ability for a public school to do that.
And a lot of private schools have that same flaw built mm-hmm. into them. They have, unfortunately, in the last 100 years...
They've adopted the public school system.
Yeah. Which is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even more horrible when we're forced to pay taxes to support the public school. And then out of your own pocket, you take all that money, because private schools are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And you take all that money and you go and you pay it to a private school. And they use the exact same method
yeah.
as the public school.
And there are some private schools that do not adopt that
right.
mentality.
Right.
There are like the Montessori schools and those mm-hmm. types of schools do things radically differently.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they use a standardized model. It's a different model,
mm-hmm.
but it's still a standardized model. And children are so unique and individual that even a radically different model, you know, some children don't do well unschooling.
Right.
You know, they need that list of, you know, I need to be able to do this amount of work today. And mm-hmm. some children thrive on that.
Yeah.
And some children don't mm-hmm. at all. And so it's really unfair to either one of those
yeah.
to force a different way of learning on them.
And so as the kids enter into their teen years, mm-hmm. and as they begin to not only physically experience the oddities of puberty, oops, I meant to turn that down.
Sorry, folks.
And not only as they enter the physical oddities of puberty and the weirdness that starts to come in as their bodies begin to mature and everything, but during that same time, there's all kinds of weird chemicals going on in their brains mm-hmm. that are telling them, that are giving them all kinds of emotional signals that they've never felt before. Mm-hmm. And
a natural defiance of their parents.
Yeah.
Because this is entirely natural.
Yeah.
You know, it's their job to mm-hmm. learn to do things outside of their pack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're coming into a natural leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
And that can work just fine within mm-hmm. a family.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that can be really detrimental to the pack.
Yeah. Because, especially if you have an alpha, a mm-hmm. child who's a natural alpha.
Mm-hmm.
And some people don't believe that this is the case, that some people are natural alphas and some people are natural
and
betas.
Again, I don't understand why every other animal on the face mm-hmm. of the planet has these social structures and yeah. people think that humans don't.
Yeah, well, maybe if we elect them. Yeah. So now coming from my experience mm-hmm. of having raised at least one and possibly two alpha children, I think one alpha child and one semi alpha child and one not at all alpha child.
You talking about me?
You were the alpha. You were like, I'm in charge. I'm doing this. Out of my way. This is an experience where if you decide, you know, if you take the route that I'm the Lion King, and your place is, you know, you're going to have a constant clash.
Right.
So what you have to do.
Had a constant clash.
Yeah, yeah. I speak from experience.
Believe it or not, once upon a time, this happy. Yeah, no, didn't happen.
Yeah.
There was quite a bit of strife.
Yeah, I had to learn the things that we're talking about right now. I had to learn, and I had to learn them the hard way through figuring out that I was not going to be able to just say, we're going to do it this way. Uh-oh. And all the dogs seem to be secure, and I think
perimeter is secure.
Yeah, perimeter is secure. We're safe. The dogs saved the day for whatever evil was attacking us. So that's the interruptions of Bad Quaker Podcast. So where were we? Do you recall what we were talking about?
Oh, yes, having an alpha.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. It was a process I had to learn mm-hmm. because my tendency is to set the law down. You know, I'm the big Moses, and this is going to be how it's going to be. And if you're going to be part of this tribe, it's going to be my way or the highway, you know. But you weren't all that keen on just blindly doing what you're told.
No.
You had a tendency to, the very fact that you were told to do something meant that there was probably a reason you didn't want to do it.
Yeah, I am, I had a tendency to, I came out of the womb a kicking, screaming anarchist. I have authority issues.
But that has, on the other hand, once we all together figured out how to adapt around that and work together and work towards a common goal, I mean, now I don't know of, I maybe this is bragging, but I don't know of a father-daughter situation that they get along better than us.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm delusional. Maybe you're sitting over there thinking, yeah,
hit crazy old man. No, I'm just in it for the family wealth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The vast Bad Quaker fortunes. I've got a button. See my button?
And a bowl full of nickels.
And a stick.
And a stick, yes. The family stick.
Kai just inherited a stick.
I did.
I kid you not. Kai inherited a stick. Yeah. So anyway.
But the point is that, you know, you do have to, and just like being harsh with an alpha will not work,
mm-hmm.
being harsh with someone who is not an alpha will not work either.
Yeah, it can bowl them over. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, if you have someone who is a little bit hold back, a little bit, and I'm not saying intelligence.
No.
Specifically individuals within our family that are not run out in your face, bold like Kai.
The people who were not getting pulled into the principal's office in seventh grade for distributing anarchist flyers.
You have to be careful that you're not just spoon-feeding life to them.
Right.
No matter what they want.
Right.
The people that are not so assertive in their... The children who are not so assertive in their will, you have to sort of provide a method to let them bring that out and learn to be more assertive.
Specifically, if there are siblings who are more dominant personalities.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that can be really difficult mm-hmm. to find a balance between, you know, having this very dominant child and then having... you know, a more reserved child,
yeah.
you have to make sure that that reserved child doesn't go without their needs being met.
Yeah, because it's really easy.
They're not really vocal about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. It's real easy for them to fall off into the shadows and just accept everything and mm-hmm. and then, you know, quietly sit in the dark going,
I'm going to burn the house down. My steepler.
So you want to work away from those tendencies.
Yes.
But
and I truly believe that every personality type has a light side and a dark side,
mm-hmm.
you know, and every person has the ability to, you know, become, you know, the good parts of your personality or the bad parts of your personality.
Mm-hmm.
And as a parent, you have to go, what are the good parts of that child's personality? Mm-hmm. What are the bad parts? How do we bring them more towards the good parts?
Yeah.
You know? And with, you know, an alpha child, a mm-hmm. more dominant child, you know, putting them in positions where they have the ability to have leadership roles
yeah.
is a great thing to do. And teaching mm-hmm. them the responsibility of having leadership roles and all of that. And then having, for the more reserved child, mm-hmm. being able to give them outlets
yeah.
that they can... either creatively or intelligently or whatever their focus lies,
mm-hmm.
being able to give them that ability
mm-hmm.
to express themselves,
yeah.
you know?
And the amount of structure that they require mm-hmm. to meet their personality, if that means right, helping them work together and write up a schedule for mm-hmm. them to do this and this and this, or whatever it takes to develop the structure that they need in their
life.
And that
can be hard because if it doesn't match your personality type,
mm-hmm.
that can be really hard for you.
Yeah. So, while we're on the topic of the different ways, the different, you know, one possible outlet for a kid is extracurricular activity, whether that be in some type of, you know, maybe like a dance class mm-hmm. or sports of some kind or some other type of activity
right.
like that.
Art classes.
Yeah, art or music or whatever it is. This is kind of a really difficult area because, you know, within the structure of traditional schools are,
right.
Government schools, within the structure of the government schools and private schools that are fashioned after those, these things are very, generally very available, but... whether or not they're effective in what they seek to accomplish
mm-hmm.
might be questionable. In the case of some kids, a structured sports program or like I said a second ago, a dance class or like some type of whatever it might be, whatever type of extracurricular activity that a school would allow. Nikki's coming up to join us and look at the microphone. Those things for some kids can be very effective in giving them an outlet to not only burn energy. Some people really are big on having something like that for the child to burn energy on. And there's probably some truth to that. Kids need exercise and they need a way to be active physically because it helps the mind. But in addition to that, just a general thing that they can be involved in, that they can feel a part of.
Right.
There is a value in that to a certain extent. You don't want that to a fanatical point that a lot of sports teams do, though.
Sports not just as in, like, football or whatever, but the whole, you know, cheerleading, dance, all of it.
Yeah.
And not just, you know, sports in the traditional sense, but also, like, you know, theater and anything that you get your kid involved in that becomes obsessive.
Yeah.
Because you do have to watch. There are certain personality types that tend towards obsessive patterns.
Yeah.
And that can be really destructive.
Yeah. But I don't want to sound like I'm against, like, some people are against sports because of the competition and because of the win and lose, and they want everybody to get a trophy and everything. I'm not in that camp at all. I'm of the camp that competition is good, and kids need to know how to lose, and kids need to know how to win with grace.
I think part of the problem is that you have, and this is going to sound so, I mean, we're... Well, it always comes back to this, but when you have adults centrally planning sports teams and everything like that for kids, I think it's far less effective than if you have a group of kids who go out and they play football.
Yeah.
As a kid, when we lived in Reno, you know, my brother would drag me to play football all the time. And it was just the neighborhood kids with a football. And there were teams, and you divide into teams, and you play the game, and there are winners, and there are losers. And
no coach, no referee.
Yeah, there's not, you know, this obsessive, overwhelming, you know, intense stress that happens with it.
Right.
You know, it's not the end of the world if you lose.
Yeah.
And it's not the best thing in the universe if you win.
Yeah.
You know, they won last week, we won this week, whatever, you know.
And that's really more like what life is and what the market is, and less like what you mentioned, central planning. I think the more often as a parent, the more often we can spot central planning in a family structure and work away from it and allow what, you know, if you can get your mind in the direction of capitalism, profit, loss, you know, get your mind in that direction and away from central planning, you'll always have more success in whatever the venture, whether it's actual, you know, financing of any kind, business or not, even in any other structure. So then as the kids start to get into the latter parts of the teen years.
And I would recommend, you know, you touched on during the teenage years, there are a lot of, you know, new and differing amounts of chemicals flooding your brain. I think if at no other time in your life, the preteen, pre-hormonal, prepubescent to pubescent years are the most important time for good nutrition in a kid.
Yeah.
Because the only way that their brain can begin to normalize these levels of hormones is if they have adequate nutrition.
Yeah.
And there are so many issues that can start right around puberty because you can have these sudden hormone fluxes that trigger nutritional deficiencies, and when you have that happen, it rapidly spirals out of control. And teenagers really don't need anything else adding to their
already stressful situation.
Right. I mean, their bodies are already stressed to the max. You know, I think the only other time that's more stressful to a human body is actually during pregnancy.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only other time I can think of where you have such an abundance of really foreign hormones.
Yeah, it's almost a metamorphosis that's going on in the person. And I'm going to just, I don't want to get into a big paleo thing here, you know, a big primal thing. But I want to just throw this out, that from the time that a child is born and until the time that they become, until they stop growing and pass
and that's, I mean, that's really like the latter 20s.
Yeah, when a person really, their body is finishing off its changes and everything. Fat is not your enemy.
No.
The brain is made up mostly of fat.
And hormones are made of cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have cholesterol in your diet, you are not making the adequate amount of hormones.
Yeah. Without making this the
radical food discussion.
Just don't buy into the lies of the state and the agrochemical company. what are they called? Anyway, you know who I mean.
Yeah, the big agriculture.
Yeah. It's almost, if you look at the investor, pharma, agri, military, industrial, it's all pretty much the same group of people.
Well, yeah.
But anyway, don't buy into their lies. Feed your kids real food, you know? Sugar is your enemy, not fat.
Yeah, and, you know, don't be a complete, you know, totalitarian about it.
Right.
Know? We'll never allow sugar in this household. No. Because when you do that, it becomes a foreign, tempting object and they can find it.
Yeah. Prohibitions don't work. I'll get it out eventually.
It never works.
Yeah.
So, you know, just simply promoting good nutrition and promoting actual real life food.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of my biggest pet peeves when you start to talk to kids and not just kids, but adults too, because we've gone through an entire cycle of generations now where we don't know what food is, what food looks like, what food tastes like.
Right.
You know, people don't know what food is anymore.
And this is a good time frame. When they're in their teens, it's a good time. And let's just say, for the sake of the conversation, let's say you haven't really been into a lot of nutrition stuff and your kids are about to go into the teens or they've begun the teens. And you're like, I really don't have time for that. I'm working. You know, the husband is working. The wife is working. We're struggling. We're trying to make our way. The best we can do is food out of a box.
Mm-hmm.
The best we can do is microwave. And there are times in a family's life when that's just the facts of life.
Mm-hmm.
But in those teen years, this is a good time to actually reach out to those teenagers and help them, let them help you, and brainstorm ways so that they can help and you can help, all together improving your nutrition. And this will help them and it will help you at the same time.
Anyone with a teenage boy knows, although teenage girls, it's very similar, knows that they are nonstop eating machines.
Yeah.
And it is to your benefit to give them nutrient-dense foods.
Yeah.
And I know that buying, you know, steaks and things is more expensive than buying oatmeal.
Right.
I know it is.
Yeah.
But they are going to go through that junk food.
Yeah.
And they're going to eat and eat and eat and eat and eat.
Yeah.
Because they are nutrient starved.
Yeah. And if you're providing them with rich, fat-rich, squeaky chair. If you're providing them with fat-rich foods, protein-rich foods, cholesterol-rich foods, you're going to fill them up and satisfy those urges.
Yeah, and you know, I see so many people who, you know, oh well, my kid eats, you know, their fruit and vegetables, and fruits and vegetables are great.
Right,
they are. Vegetables more than fruit.
Yeah.
Fruit are treats. Yeah. They're desserts. Yeah. They are the best dessert you can eat.
Yeah.
But they are desserts.
Yeah.
And vegetables are good, and they have a lot of nutrients, mm-hmm. but they're not very nutrient-dense.
Right.
And, you know, it will make vegetarians and vegans screaming mad when you say it, but the best food that you can feed your growing children mm-hmm. is food from animals, and yeah. food from animals that have been living well.
Yeah, not pumped full of antibiotics standing in a stall.
And if you can't afford it, because yeah. it's expensive,
yeah.
if you can't afford good meat, mm-hmm. it's better to have bad meat than no meat.
Exactly.
You know, and this yeah. is where a lot of the paleo, real food, Weston A. Price people differ. They say it's better to have less meat than bad meat. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that's true. I think it's better to have whatever meat you can get
yeah.
rather than no meat.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you're afraid, or if you're unsure, or if you have doubts about genetically modified things and stuff pumped full of hormones and, mm-hmm. and all that, me too.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind that for whatever the purposes are, if you go to a mostly grain based diet, you're eating genetically modified food.
Oh yeah.
And so if you buy cheap meat. Yes, you are getting stuff with hormones and antibiotics and all the other things, but at least it's a cow. It is right. not a fish, cow, buckwheat.
Right.
You know, it's not some weird thing that's half fruit, half vegetable, and half fish.
Right.
And I'm not making that up. You know, that's the way they splice genes. It's yeah. bizarre. It is very unnatural.
Well, and the way that they I don't want to get into the whole genetically modified thing, because that's a podcast by itself, right?
Yeah.
There. But the way that they do it is they infect bacteria, they infect viruses
mm-hmm.
that then infect the cells, because that's how viruses reproduce.
Yeah.
Viruses reproduce by taking virus DNA and mixing it with host DNA, and that host DNA reproduces. That's how viruses work, and that's how they create genetically modified foods.
Yeah, which is really bizarre.
Yeah, it's horrifying if you really think about it.
So we realize that there are budgetary issues mm-hmm. in every family, and we realize that you have to do what you have to do within the limits of your finances. Mm-hmm. But even in the worst situations, bad meat is better than a grain diet,
right.
because all grain diets are bad grain diets.
Yeah.
So anyway, now that's gonna provide a better basis for a child to have a more balanced nutritional mm-hmm. View and a more balanced hormonal
and,
view.
You know, I think the best thing that you can do to encourage a emotionally stable, healthy child is to feed them an adequate diet from birth.
Yeah.
But from before birth.
Yeah.
Because you can't expect an emotionally stable child if you're not giving them the nutrition that they need to be emotionally stable.
And sunlight is your friend.
Yes.
I'm not saying sunburns are good. Don't get a sunburn. Sunburns are painful. They hurt.
Right.
Skin grafts are no fun. But the sun is our friend.
Mm-hmm.
The sun has been with us since the beginning. And the sun is not an evil thing to hide from and smear chemicals on your body for.
Right.
Yes, we do wear some clothes and we prevent ourselves from being sunburned, because that's like a radiation burn. It's
right.
bad. But,
you know, drowning is bad too. But
yes.
water is necessary for life.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, all things in moderation, but all things.
Right.
This is, okay, now teens. Teens and prohibition.
Yes.
Your natural tendency is to want to set down a series of laws and say, this is going to happen and this is not going to happen. And when you start to balance all those things out, there's a whole lot more this is not going to happen mm-hmm. than there is this is going to happen. And so what this creates is a series of prohibitions that are impossible for a parent to enforce.
Right.
Now, every parent wants to lie to themselves and say, you know, my daughter's going to be a good little girl. My son's going to be a good little boy. They're not going to do these naughty things. Mm-hmm. You have very little control over those things. Mm-hmm. The only thing as a parent you can really do is lay the foundations and trust your child. Mm-hmm. And your child may or may not experiment, but whether they will or will not is not based on the heavy hand of you becoming the parent Nazi that's mm-hmm. going to make their life miserable.
Yep.
You can still show love for them. You can attempt to show leadership.
And,
but you cannot be the parent police.
And you have to discuss these things.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to not lie to your kids.
Yeah, that's critical.
Because
if you try to portray yourself as being this pure angelic person who never ever did anything wrong when you were a teenager, your kids are going to know you're lying mm-hmm. to them, and all credibility is lost. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you have to brag about the time you knocked over the Denny's.
Right.
that would be slang for robbery. But I never robbed a Denny's. Let me just say that. I never robbed a Denny's. They deserved it. No, I never robbed an IHOP either. But the fact that you're honest with the child, you will gain far more respect than if you put on some kind of a false face and hope the child doesn't figure out mm-hmm. the facade, and they will.
Well, because, you know, your kid will always try something that you have encouraged them not to.
Yeah.
And it starts out small.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're honest with them and you say, this is why people do this, this is why people shouldn't do this, mm-hmm. you know, then they can go, okay, yep, that was true. Mm-hmm. And they go, okay, so the rest of these must be true.
Yeah.
But if they say, if you come down and you say, you know, drinking alcohol is terrible and you will instantly die. And then they have a beer at a party and they go, nothing happened.
Yeah.
My parents don't know what they're talking about.
There is actually
then that cascades.
Yeah. There's actually anti-alcohol propaganda floating around from the 1800s that says that these were to be taught to children, school children, mm-hmm. and it says things like, upon consuming alcohol, the stomach is permanently burned and deformed, and it says stuff like this, and you know, you would think they were talking about meth or crack or, you know, heroin or something, mm-hmm. the way that they portray this. And how old does a kid have to get before he realizes, oh, that's all a bunch of lies. Mm-hmm. So if you tell them the truth to begin with, first off, here's something that I told to my kids very early on. Brain cells divide and multiply, mm-hmm. and excessive alcohol kills brain cells. So if you have 10 and you lose one of them, and then there's 5 multiplications of that, did we lose you on the math already?
Oh, yeah.
You've lost a lot of brain cells from losing that one. And this is especially critical when you're in the years when your brain is literally growing. Mm-hmm. Your head is growing. Your brain is growing. Not only are you developing an intelligence, but your brain is physically growing. Mm-hmm. You don't want to lose brain cells at a critical time like that.
Right.
That's not a convincing argument to cause a kid not to take a drink of any kind of alcoholic beverage, but you're at least being honest with them, and right. you're giving them information. You're not telling them they're going to turn into an alcoholic zombie
right.
because they had a drink at a party.
Right.
You know, and also if you set up a series of hard prohibition lies, then what you're going to do is you're going to force them to go out and do these things
and hide it.
Yeah.
And you know, from a kid perspective, as a kid, you always think you get away with more than
yeah.
you really did.
Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, my parents never knew about that. Well, yeah, they did. They knew, you know. But at the same time, as a parent, you think, well, I know everything that my kid does. No, you don't.
Yeah.
You know, you really, really do not.
Yeah, there's two sides of that tale right
yeah.
there. That is absolutely true. And a lot of parents don't want to hear that. They mm-hmm. want to live in a naive world. And a lot of kids don't want to hear that. Mm-hmm. They want to live in a naive world where they think they have their parents totally fooled.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't.
Right.
You know, you may have them fooled part of the time. but not all the time.
And if you have that hard prohibition, you have that, you know, kids are going to mess up.
Yeah.
Kids are going to make mistakes. Kids are going to get into trouble.
Yeah.
And if you've set yourself as a, if you're not perfect, then you're not acceptable,
mm-hmm.
then they're never going to come to you.
Yeah.
You know, they're never going to say, hey, this happened. I need help.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But if you have that kind of relationship where you're honest,
mm-hmm.
then they can come to you and they can say, you know, look, this is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you can figure out some a way to fix the situation without it escalating into, you know, I have to hide this, I have to fix this myself. And then, you know, that just mm-hmm. keeps that, the kid can never break out of that. And then the next thing you know, your kid's lost.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Well, that pretty much gets us well into the most serious parts of the teens.
Mm-hmm.
We do still need to talk about adult children, mm-hmm. adult siblings among themselves and their responsibility or lack thereof to each other,
mm-hmm.
and the adult child. Does that make sense? The adult offspring. That sounds very clinical. But for parents to deal with their adult children,
mm-hmm.
and for children... for adult children to deal with their aging parents. Mm-hmm. We still have a lot to go on this. And we'll probably come back to pieces of it as we go through. Because
right.
this is not a all-encompassing. We're not going to cover 5, 10, 15 years of child raising in an hour as podcast.
And, you know, I mean, if you guys have specific questions
mm-hmm.
about what our philosophy regarding specific incidences or, you know, whatever, you can always email us.
Yeah.
You know, we're floundering around here and we always take suggestions. Whether or not we remember to actually talk about that one subject or not, but
yeah.
Can't guarantee we'll give you a straight answer, but we'll bring it up.
Well, and my email address is ben@badquaker.com.
And I'm Kai, K-I, at badquaker.com.
Folks, thanks for listening to badquaker.com podcast. And as always, for more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. Thanks a lot, folks.